So on last week's podcast, I said that the first listener to send the word litter box to me on Twitter would receive a Plants vs. Zombies code I found on my desk during the podcast. That podcast was posted last Thursday on July 31st at about 8:30 in the evening. Okay, so 4 days later, a guy with the username Quorn on Twitter sends the word litter box to me on Twitter. And in his message, he said, "A bit late, I know, but worth a go." A bit late? Dude, that was 4 days ago. That was last month. I was absolutely blown away that he would even bother. And I thought, holy smokes, this is exactly the kind of person who makes the world so great. I mean, this guy is the kind of visionary who spits in the face of certain failure, who charges into battle fearlessly. This is the guy, kind of guy who will be told, not be told, "I'm sorry, but that's just impossible, sir." No, it's not impossible, and it takes a brave soldier like Quorn to prove it. So I called PopCap and asked for another code to give it to him. So I'm dedicating this podcast to you, Quorn, and to everybody else who has ever forged ahead against impossible odds. Welcome to episode 186 of the PC Gamer podcast for August 6th, 2009. This is your host, Logan Decker, and this week we've got a party and an MP3 for you with my co-hosts, previews editor Evan Lottie.
Hello.
Alpha intern Josh Augustine.
It is good to be back.
Beta intern Max McGee.
Yankee Doodle.
And venerable podcast producer Andy Bauman.
What does venerable mean? I'm not even sure.
It's like honored.
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Yeah. What a word.
Thanks,
Slightly,
Logan.
Honored. Perhaps.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Worthy of veneration.
Ouch.
Mm-hmm. And of course, somewhere out there, Quorn is listening, I'm hoping. And Quorn, I hope you are very much enjoying Plants vs. Zombies. God knows I still am. First, a little sad news. As we augured on the last podcast, StarCraft has indeed been officially delayed to 2010.
A little sad news.
Man, Christmas is canceled.
Dude, Christmas is like, Santa's on suicide watch. Come on.
Yeah. That is, well, I guess maybe I was thinking a little because I kind of had already prepared for it emotionally. You know, because the idea was being bandied about that it might happen, and sure enough, and it doesn't seem like it has much to do with the game itself, but more to do with Battle.net.
Yeah, that's the story anyway.
So, I don't know, do we take new bets over what month?
Well, I mean, you and Josh and Max were right in the first one, so what do you guys think?
Yes, we were.
I believe we said February, right?
Yeah. I'm sticking with that. I like that.
Yeah, February feels right to me.
It feels right to you.
You know? It has that StarCrafty kind of feel to
sure.
it.
Love is in the air, snow is
melting.
Uh-huh.
Exactly, exactly.
Okay.
So yeah, it's pretty trippy, right, to miss the whole holiday season, but you know, it's also nice to have your game, you know, kind of stand out and not be lost in the the holiday rush. Not that I think StarCraft would pretty much blow everything else away anyway, but still.
Everybody else has to be breathing a sigh of relief at that news.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, this is just some sort of strategic counter they're playing. So the recon goes in, sees that they haven't built an army yet to come attack us. But really, they are. It's like a meta game of StarCraft with the audience.
Oh.
I just really wanted to use the word meta.
There were two movies that did that years ago, and I can't remember which ones they were. I think it might have been the Volcano movies, but I remember reading about this in like Harper's or something like that, where these two studios were making two themed movies at the same time. And I think it was the two Volcano movies that came out, Dante's Peak and Volcano. And when they heard about each other's productions, one said, "Oh, we're going to hold off on it." I don't think it was the Volcano movies, but anyway. And because, you know, we don't want to compete with this other thing. No, it was an animated movie. Sorry, I know it was an animated movie. And so the other one went forward, and then surprise, surprise, the one who said they were delaying their production came out first. because they didn't want the other one to, you know, to speed up and pick up the pace. And then they did come out first. And I can't remember what animated movie it was, but I thought that was a pretty slick move.
That's devious. That's devious. Oh, it would be awesome yeah. if Blizzard did that. Just like
right?
slip it in there.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Ta-da! August. You know, hi. But, you know, hey, you know, so that's just more time with your friends and family and your pets over the holidays. And that's what the holidays are really yeah. about.
Is it though? I mean, like,
no, if, not really.
No, I mean, let's be realistic. If you're in a place that you get snowed on, like Andy,
yeah,
I love snow myself. I mean, there's this natural insulation that occurs. Like you're in your house more. Mm-hmm. I play a lot of games during the wintertime when I live in the Midwest, and I mean that's like the perfect time to sort of join this new multiplayer community that StarCraft would have been.
Yeah.
And just see it develop and get involved with it.
Okay, so I guess we all agree that it will be a sad Christmas. Well, all right. It's not all bad news. A big, big patch came out on WoW servers on Tuesday, patch 3.2. Josh, you want to tell us a little bit about the excitement going on there?
Most definitely. There's actually an awesome breakdown in our October issue that we just should be hitting subscribers pretty soon. So if you're interested in that, definitely worth checking out. But the Argent tournament got expanded with, you know, new dailies, new dungeons. There's 5, 10, and 25-man dungeons, heroics and normal. XP and battlegrounds, which is my favorite feature ever added in any game of all time.
Wait, not XP really, and battlegrounds? Oh, I was like, what?
Yeah, so you get experience for doing PvP and stuff, which is great. So, and there's, let's see, the mounts are super cheap, and you can get them at low levels now, so it cuts down a lot of time if you're going to be starting a new character. And of course, you know, tons of class balances. But yeah, there's tons of stuff for raiders, PvPers. It's really, they do these patches once a year, and it's kind of like a mini expansion pack. So there's tons of stuff. The servers were down for like 24 hours, though, which caused riots in the streets and on the forums. But
24 hours.
Yeah.
When's the last time they were offline that long?
The last time they did a big patch like this, so probably, you know, like at least a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So if you're waiting, because a lot of people, when a big patch like this comes out, they just don't play WoW for a couple days because they figure it's going to be bad. So if you're still waiting, you can jump back in. Everything's stable and good to go now. So get in there and check it out.
I imagine all these people like walking out of their houses blinking in the light, you know?
Yeah. Well, I got home at 9:00 PM on Tuesday. They bring down the servers at like 5 AM. I was like, okay, so I'm going to get home at 9 PM. I was like, all right, the servers have to be up by then. I get home, have a little dinner, go to my computer, and it still wasn't working. And then I was like, okay, this isn't the end of the world. I can play League of Legends. Then League of Legends wasn't working.
Then I didn't know
what to do. I talked
the
to Snacks
stars were aligned.
I know. Then I just turned off the computer and just went to bed.
You did what?
Turned off the computer.
What is this of which you speak?
It was sleep mode. It's just sleep mode. It's okay.
Wow, that would be great if you found out that the World of Warcraft you went back to playing is actually the Matrix version. Yeah, and you know, and then it's just sort of, you know, no, you're caught, right? And somebody busts you out into the real world of Warcraft, and yeah, now my head just completely crashed. My brain just shut down for that one. That was too meta.
Because it's so meta. Something... Oh, you beat me to it.
Oh,
always will. Always will.
Something interesting. Dan Amrick, who formerly of Official Xbox Magazine. Was telling me last week about the Matrix Online, which shut down, I think, a week ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About, I guess, you know, if you're in the game in the final minutes or the final hours, the world was like sort of turning into source code or whatever. Like,
I heard about that. I had a friend
who so makes me wish
telling me about all the crazy stuff that was going on. They had basically like written the story so that the machines were going to win and they were shutting down the Matrix. And so, pretty much every crazy anomaly that they sort of hinted at in the movie, like the ghosts and the werewolves and stuff, was just like blown out of proportion. They were just running wild. Everything was in chaos. And if you got in like in the last moments before they shut it down, like the world had been getting progressively smaller and smaller as they cut off more of the Matrix. Uh-huh. And the last area was just this big open room that everybody was crammed into and everybody was fighting each other. It was just pandemonium.
That's pretty epic.
Wow.
I mean, it's cool to do like a canonical shutdown. It's kind of a nice service to your family.
That so makes me wish I've been playing it all these years, you know, just for that
just for that
finishing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. And, you know, and it's really, it's respectful, you know, the company to have closed it in a way that, you know, that has some meaning rather than just, you know, flipping the switch. Yeah. Yeah. Like later gators, you know. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And that really, I mean, I don't know, should have been the ultimate MMO, but what just wasn't it time?
The combat system wasn't really developed or unique enough.
Yeah.
It kind of fit too much into existing conventions instead of doing something different. But there's a cool video out there for it. Go check it out.
Another one of the things we were talking about last week was oldschoolapps.com, the abandonware site. Well, one of the admins wrote in on the PC Gamer podcast forum screaming and hollering that under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, we had, quote, no legal right to podcast about them without prior clearance, unquote.
Wait, what?
Just kidding.
Oh, I was like, that's not what he said. I read that.
A super nice guy named Sean from the site thanked us for the coverage and let me know that they like to call the site OSA and that they are not home of the undergods. Undergods. I like that. They're not Home of the Underdogs Resurrected, but a completely separate thingy. So that, again, that's oldschoolapps.com and it remains fantastic. A special news bulletin here. We have two really sick deals going on right at the moment. If you hustle over to Direct to Drive, they are having a special right now on indie games, Best of Indie Bundle Volume 1, that has for less than $18, what is this? Xenoclash, The Path, Defense Grid, what else is going on in there? Cogs. I don't know. Basically, you know what? For Defense Grid alone, it's worth $18. And then you get Xenoclash as well, which I still have to play.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know.
You'd love it. I think you'd like it a lot.
Well, it had the, what, squirrel bombs?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. What took me? It's been a busy month. And I'm even curious about this Path business because it looks so unique. But, yeah, you get five games. And again, Defense Grid alone is worth $18. But Defense Grid, Democracy 2, The Path, Xenoclash, and Cogs. So go grab that up. Also on Steam, they've got Prototype for 20% off. So it's going for $40. And I loved it. If you like blood, if you like cutting people in half, and we all do, then you want to grab that one as well. Well, EA came by today and showed off Command & Conquer 4 here at the PC Gamer compound. Evan and Max were there to take it all in. Evan, take it away.
Yeah, so it was really almost surprising to get an early look at the game this early. We didn't get hands-on, but we did get to see a nice one of the GDI campaign levels about five levels into this game, Max, I think.
It was five levels into the GDI portion of the campaign.
So they gave us a quick rundown of the gaming features. Kind of what stuck out was they're not going for an over-the-top campy game anymore. I mean, it's not Command & Conquer 3. They're not going to bring in Tim Curry to voice, a Russian dictator or whatever. It's a pretty straightforward, story-driven sci-fi game in that respect. And let's see, just to recap the story, it's set in 2062. And essentially, Tiberium, which is this energy resource within the Command & Conquer universe, is sort of taking over the world. It's just turning everything like very desolate and, mankind's on the brink. So basically the GDI and Nod, which is Kane's faction, Kane's pretty much the main character, the most recognizable character within the Command & Conquer universe. They get together and, devise a solution, how to sort of prevent the world from destroying itself from the Tiberium. And then you sort of pick up 15 years later and you're fighting the Nod as GDI. And there will be a split campaign, of course. I mean, that's a pretty consistent thing within the CNC games. But as for the gameplay itself, I don't know, what stuck out to you the most, Max?
The thing that really stuck out to me that I was most excited about, they didn't show a whole lot in the demo they gave us, and that's the skills, the leveling up, the three different branches of abilities you can unlock, be it offense, defense, or support, sort of in the same vein of what Company of Heroes has done, where you can focus in an offensive branch, and that'll focus on like reinforcements and unit upgrades. Defense gives you special defensive structures, and support gives you, I think they said, special air units, and then
special buffs that you can give to your troops or to your allies' troops.
Yeah, I want to call it a paradigm shift. That's kind of presumptuous, but in the same way that Dawn of War 2 got rid of base building and put an emphasis on small squads and cover, it's not that kind of game, but there's a similar thought process within EA, I think, where, so they're calling it class-based, but in reality, you basically choose, so there's attack, defense, and support, and when you begin a game, you get this walker, which is your mobile base. It looks kind of like an MCV if you've played any of the Command & Conquer games, but it can move around, and all your units and your resourcing and everything kind of runs through that. You're not building separate structures. And so the attack, the defense, and the support types have different, types of units available. Defense obviously has more turrets and things of that nature. Support can call in ion cannon strikes, things like that. And to go with that, they're sort of eliminating this conception within multiplayer and single player alike that when your base is destroyed, you're knocked out. That's kind of the core mechanic of any RTS almost. And instead they're putting more emphasis in multiplayer on capturing objectives like Dawn of War 2 again. So when your base is destroyed, you have, a 60-second knockout period, but you can re-enter the game, you can change your class, and just resume. So again, the objective is not... And their point was that that makes it more accessible to players, that they go into multiplayer and they're suddenly, they get their base destroyed, they're rushed at. So it puts more emphasis on teamwork and, those explicit kind of mechanics. And
I was just going to say, when your base gets shut down, even if you still have other troops out on the field, you can still be controlling those and while you're waiting for your next base to basically respond itself.
Yeah.
So it sort of gives you something to do while you're waiting around.
Mm-hmm. It's certainly a much more visually impressive game than CNC3, which I felt like was more meant to run on a broader spec of systems, a little bit of a cartoony color palette, which was really fun and really playful and really different. But at the same time, the lighting in this is really, really stands out. Everything is just very rich and bright in the effects. The walkers themselves, we got to take a look at the Mastodon, which is like a smaller walker. It wasn't your base walker. It was
the heavy GDI siege tank.
They call it an epic tier unit. It's this massive sort of elephant-like walker unit with four legs, and it has an independent missile turret. But so when it was starting to get destroyed and losing health, there were parts of it that were shipping off. You could see the pistons moving in its legs and the internal architecture of it, and just that kind of detail is something that's nice to see in a CNC game, I guess.
Battle scarring, always cool.
Absolutely. So we'll also share with you guys at the end of the podcast, so you don't have to listen to it now, just the quick Q&A we did with those guys earlier today, and probably throw in their bullet point look and explanation of the game features as well, just if that's helpful or if you're interested in the game. And it's still on track for 2010.
Fantastic, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Again, you'll hear the Q&A with the team at the end of the podcast, so stay tuned. I did want to share, before we go, a really cool insight that somebody had on the PC Gamer podcast forums. You can find those forums, if you haven't already, at www.pcgamerpodcast.com. That's where we keep all our podcasts, as you probably already know. But there's a lively forum community there as well. And the typer wrote in with a few comments about Far Cry, and he said, I was doing some writing regarding Far Cry 2 a while back, and I think a huge reason Far Cry 2 is hated so much sometimes is because it's very bold in its breakaway from the old corridor shooters. For the longest time, I thought we were already past the term of corridor shooter, but even games like Call of Duty 4 and the Half-Life series still retain a fixed path with scripted encounters. I wouldn't argue against this formula because it makes for some really great games. But Far Cry 2, rather unexpectedly, told me to go find and kill the jackal. It's a very confusing few seconds where you're not absolutely positive what you need to do to kill the person. And anybody that relies on a compass with an objective point on it, or an arrow to point the way to the next place to find an objective, will find themselves confused and grow a hate for the game. It took me quite a while to realize why I liked the game so much and why PC Gamer gave it a 94%. The concept isn't something like that used in Call of Duty 3, where it really makes no impact on the game. You really have to understand the mercenary concept and start working for yourself. Otherwise, you'll just hate the game and not understand where to go or what to do. It'll feel very pointless as you try to search out the story and try to side with somebody. I thought that was a great insight, that the game really does. I mean, I felt the same way at first. I didn't really enjoy it at first. I'm like, what's next, and why does this feel so amorphous? You know, but it took me a while to even get into that mode where, you know, I'm working for myself. You don't get anything handed to you necessarily. You know, you have to make the contacts. You have to find the people. You know, you have to get out there, and you don't know which direction is the right one, and you'll go in many wrong directions. You know.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Anybody care to say that was just utter crap, and you're going to vote me down or something? Or
I like.
Does anyone want to fight? That's what I'm asking.
No, I mean, the only thing I'd say is my only problem with Far Cry 2 is how all the different checkpoints and stuff would respawn so quickly, so that when you are kind of just exploring and finding your own way, you had to kill the same group of people over and over again. I loved being able to explore and just go around and be like, hey, there's an old train station down there. Maybe I'll sneak around and see what's going on, and you could take it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, like, Stalker, they do that too. Just drop you in this world, say good luck,
yeah,
let you find your own way.
Well, let's take a couple questions from the PC Gamer podcast fan base.
All right.
Hey guys, I've been using wireless internet lately because I had to switch to it, and all the games I play online lag like crazy. Even though I got an N Range Plus router and an N Range Plus internet adapter thing card for my desktop. And I've been trying to play StarCraft, but I can only play with about one person. But at the same time, my internet speed, it only takes about 2 seconds to load up a page. And I get nice, you know, I get nice lancity, too. It looks like online to me. But if you have any suggestions, I'd like to hear them. Really annoying. Thanks.
Yeah, actually, I do have a couple of suggestions. It's a very complicated, you know, situation because there's so many variables are out there that can affect your lag. But there are two things that you can do to shore things up. It's great that you have the draft N router. That's certainly fast, but it doesn't, you know, of course, guarantee you any speed. It just means that it's capable of more speed. But something else is holding you back. One thing you do is you can call your cable or DSL company and ask them to test the service and see, you know, test it for latency. You don't even have to tell them why. You just said, you know, can you do a line check for me? And they will find out if there's any bottlenecks, you know, and hopefully they'll be pretty straightforward with you. I know a lot of people who've asked their companies to test them, test their connections, and had the company actually come out and put in a repeater closer to their house. And have found their service did improve. Now another problem, and this would probably be more effective for you, but it's a little more complicated, is you probably should get a router that has what's called QoS or quality of service settings. That allows you to, prioritize certain types of traffic above others. For example, if you're doing any downloading in the background, even a little bit, any kind of streaming service, if you're watching Hulu or got some YouTube video playing, listening to somebody's iTunes, you know, library on your network, all those things can seriously slow you down. All that stuff should be shut down before you play. You probably already know that. But even so, there's still, you know, tiny bits of network traffic that can interrupt your game. And of course, it'll always hit at the very worst time. So what you want is a router, again, with QoS, quality of service settings, that allows you to say, hey, this application, StarCraft, put those packets that have everything else. There are, I know that Linksys sells one called the Extreme N gaming router, that's specifically made for gamers, and that has a lot of their settings already built in. So again, if you do a search on gaming router, you know, you'll find lots of them from D-Link and Linksys that have those. But those are the first two I would try. I would probably go for the router first. Or you can remember, even with your current router, you may still have QoS settings. You know, look in the instruction book and see if you can't fiddle with those yourself, and you could save yourself, you know, good $100. Anybody else have any magical voodoo cures?
I think in terms of like really practical diagnosis, I like to. I was on wireless a while when I was here, and if you go into a Source Engine game, you know, Counter-Strike, Left 4 Dead, TF2, and go into the console, type in net underscore graph one, it'll bring up this handy real-time graph of all your network data that's, you know, going through the game. And there's a field called choke. And if you see that fluctuating, you know, above, you know, a single digit, you kind of get the idea that you're losing packets somehow. And that's a definite sign that, you know, it's a wireless issue, you know, transmission-wise, or there's some interference. And that was definitely the case for me. And that's just like a more practical. And there's obviously a lot of like network bandwidth monitors out there you can use as well. But in terms of testing within a game, that was really helpful for me. And I like to mention it whenever anybody brings up a network issue, but monoprice.com, 100-foot Cat 5 cable shipped to you, $18. If that's, I mean,
that's a freaking
obviously
price.
That might not solve your problem.
That's
if you're
awesome. It's
living
ridiculous.
In a 10-floor house, but that's what solved my network problem.
Yeah, I did the same thing at my house. I mean, my wireless is even great. You know, it's decent, and not great. I mean, it's a little below great, but you cannot beat wired. You can't. And that $18, did you say?
Shipped, yeah.
That's crazy.
Shipped 3 days.
I mean, I don't think we could ship from our company that much cable for that much money. I mean,
it's crimped, obviously, too. It's not like a, you know, naked cable or anything.
And the Source Engine thing, I had no idea about that. That's awesome. That's a great diagnostic tool right there. Yeah. I reviewed this month the new version. We reviewed about a year ago, something called the Killer Nick, which was a network card, made specially for gamers. And you may want to look into that as well, because it sounds like the kind of thing that was really made for you. Because it has quality of service settings right on the card itself. So your router doesn't really have to. So what it does is it takes over the networking stack from Windows and does all that work itself. So Windows doesn't do any networking at all, which theoretically could or should and does often increase your frame rates, because that's, you know, frees up some system resources. And then it's the one that says, okay, these packets go first, those can just wait. And because it's actually a tiny Linux PC on a card, you can even run, if you want to, BitTorrent off the card while you're gaming with no lag, with no additional latency.
Whoa.
And that card, if you don't already have a really fancy router, that card's about $130 now and might actually do you really well.
Dude, do you think Killer Nick would ever build a wireless adapter?
You know, it's funny. I just talked with them today, and that's a very, very complicated issue, because there are so many factors that are out of their control. So imagine releasing a super great product that works really well, but your cable company sucks, you know? So who's going to look bad? You know what I mean?
Or like your microwave puts out.
Yeah.
So
they're kind of wondering like, geez, how do we approach this? You know, but they're a really, really smart company and they're doing some really innovative stuff. It's an expensive network card. The new version's called the Killer Xeno Pro, and it's for $130. You'll see the review in the October issue, which is coming at you very soon. And it's $130, and it might actually do the trick for you. Just make sure that it's always nice to buy from people who have a return policy, just in case it doesn't, because it can be really hard to identify the source of lag. Let's take another question. I had fun, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, can I mention real quick? I just looked up on.
I'm sorry, we're not able to.
Yeah, I don't know, Evan.
So I mentioned up on Monoprice. I just looked it up. Guess how much the 1,000-foot cable is? Obviously, you're going to lose some quality over that distance.
Isn't that the maximum distance you can have?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's
a fifth of a mile.
Yeah,
it'd be like $20. $162.
$100.
I would say.
No, wait, like $500.
$1.
I would say $40.
$1, Bob. $1.
$165.
How much?
$165. Oh, one. Mm-hmm. I guess $62. I was under.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the maximum length.
Oh, you were under?
Transfer without a repeat.
I lowballed because I thought all you guys were going to go over.
You are correct, Andy.
That's
incredible.
I mean,
you know what? There's a wall between us right now. Wait, hold on, my gun.
My goodness. All right, next question.
No bullets.
Hey, PCG, this is Andrew from Montreal, Canada, a.k.a. Stall Silver on Steam, calling in response to the guy last week who was having lots of weird issues trying to update the Windows 7 release candidate and stuff. You can actually do what's called a repair install that can fix a lot of weird issues with the OS without losing any of your data or programs or anything. All you have to do basically is pop in the Windows 7 disk and act as if you're going to upgrade your OS from, say, Windows XP to Windows 7, but instead of changing out the OS, all it does is replace your old Windows 7 files, which can be corrupted and stuff, with fresh, clean new ones. When I first installed the release candidate, I was having lots of weird issues with every single browser constantly crashing when I was trying to browse the web, but doing a repair install fixed it perfectly. I hope this helps the guy, and thanks a lot.
Well, that's some good advice. I can tell you that I am loving the release candidate. You know, it's pretty much consensus out there that it's what, you know, you wished Vista would have been. Just the interface alone, beautiful, light, lovely, clean. Yeah, I'm all over it. We have, our final verdict on Windows 7 coming up in the November 09 issue. So you want to be looking out for that one.
I know, I'm looking forward to it. And thanks to Andrew, by the way. He's one of my e-friends that I talk to on Steam sometimes. And he's one of the developers He's one of the developers for the Firearm Source mod that they're working on up there. And you can check it out at firearms-source.com.
There's a cabal over here developing.
E-friends. He was my e-friend first.
Oh. EFF. E-friends forever.
Yes.
That's right. You need to get an EFF bracelet.
I do.
Put a ring on it, man.
An e-bracelet.
Put a ring on it.
E-EFF.
Put
an
e-ring on it.
Hey, you guys. It's Terry Teardog Matthews. I'm up in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And I got a question for you guys about the state of the first-person shooter market. Because, honestly, I'm getting sick and tired of all the World War II sci-fi first-person shooters. BioShock was awesome when it came out. Modern Warfare was awesome when it came out. Modern Warfare 2, boring as heck. BioShock 2, yeah, I'll probably get it eventually. Is there anything that you guys like coming down the pipe that's going to be really good, you think? For me personally, Borderlands looks awesome. Anyhow, love to look at the new mag. Take it easy.
I think taking out World War II and science fiction dislodges a huge chunk from the shooter canon.
Well, there's certainly, Wolfenstein, which I've been playing right now, and Singularity by the same developer, coincidentally, Raven. I mean, those are definitely merging of World War II and sci-fi. But in terms of what you'd want is something totally different. Hopefully. Again, Xenoclash.
Oh, there you go.
If you haven't played, I mean, it's not only is it artistically and, you know, thematically something different, it's, you know, you're punching people. The gameplay is different. It's more in your face. The flow is different. I mean, it's, I can't recommend it enough.
One common theme, like, that you don't find in World War II shooters and sci-fi shooters is the squirrel bombs, right? Am I correct?
Almost definitely. Though, yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because the most recent Call of Duty World at War map pack.
Oh, no. Here it comes, yeah. So,
not squirrels. I was watching the trailer for it this morning, and
well, this is going to be intense.
You know those monkeys with the symbols? They clap them together.
Ah, yeah. Clank, 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 clank,
yes.
Clank.
So I guess that's an item that you can use to distract Nazi zombies. And
they really like the symbol banging monkeys.
And they have a bomb attached to them. So
wow.
That's pretty unique, admittedly.
I mean, certainly your grievances are heard. You know, World War II, as great as some of these games are, you know, it's been done. It will continue to be done. Although I love sci-fi shooters. To me, they will never, ever, ever get old. But there's also horror shooters out there. There's Fear, which I guess you could say is science fiction. Yes, it does have a mech. None of those are nearly as out there as Xenoclash, which really is something different with a capital D.
If you can find it, there's a demo for this indie game called Pencil Whipped. And I don't know if the guy ever finished it or not, but it's this first-person shooter that's all drawn out like on paper, just with pencils. So it's sort of just everything's gray and white. And all of the sound effects the guy has obviously done just with his mouth. So like when you go to open a door, it goes whoosh. And when a guy runs up to attack you, he goes smack, smack, and he punches you in the face. But it's just, it's really trippy looking. And if you can find it, it's pretty neat.
And the next one will be called Pencil Whipped Number 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Get it? Number 2. Number.
I do.
Number 2 Pencil.
Oh my God.
Did everybody get that?
I got it.
Yeah, all right. Well, I mean, I don't hear. I think your mics got cut off. I don't hear laughing. Or... Did we drop out? I think we dropped out. Yeah.
No, I mean, I'm trying to think of like the Saboteur, though. For example, this is, you know, World War II third person shooter cover system. So I think you find situations where it's almost like the publisher's saying, "Hey, we know World War II successful. You know, this is an established. You know, Nazis are fun for players. People buy these games." But then the developer comes in with these unique concepts, like in Saboteur, where it's a black and white game at the start that you sort of develop color within the game, within the graphics, by completing certain parts of the story, like restoring this part of France. You're basically liberating, and it's represented with a color system. So that's, you know, one example of, again, you know, it's within the World War II universe, but people are trying to do something interesting with it, I think. And Metro 2033 is another example of that kind of, you know, overdone post-apocalyptic shooter that you think of. We haven't really seen a lot on it lately. It's by the same folks that did Stalker. It's very half-life-like. That's hard to say.
Tongue twister.
And very atmospheric. It takes place underground. And so, you know, I wouldn't stay away from these games just because they happen to be sci-fi, just because they happen to be. I mean, they can surprise you. I'm playing Wolfenstein right now. It's really surprising me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Plus, I suddenly can think of a couple other ones, like Stranglehold, I thought was a little underrated.
Oh, God.
I really, really enjoyed that.
I'll be the dissenting voice. I didn't really like that much.
You're a fool.
Can you drop your mic out again? I thought it was, if you liked Max Payne, you know, I thought it was a great take on that. Even better, definitely a different flavor. There's lots of Western shooters out there, like Gun and
Call of Juarez.
Ooh, the new Call of Juarez.
Yeah, Call of Juarez, yeah. And what isn't Rockstar doing one?
Red Dead Redemption.
Yes. And it looks, that looks really tasty. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, when's that coming out?
Next year, not for a while.
Oh, next year. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, the Westerns have been very popular as well.
We're talking about Far Cry 2.
$18. Yeah. Come on, $18. Oh, yeah, and Far Cry 2. We were just talking about that.
Scott,
and
remember,
now you know what mood to be in.
Those very, very good firefights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Xenoclash, if you're tired of shooting Nazis, you get to take a sledgehammer and hit people that look like humanoid kiwis with it. I mean...
You don't get that anywhere else.
That's a contrast right there. I mean, that's
absolutely. Evan.
Yeah.
I'm just dying to know what you've been playing this week.
I know you are. So it was a historic moment for me last weekend. I bought my first server.
What?
For a game.
Oh my God, my heart just kind of stopped when he said, "I bought my," and I was like, "Oh no, server, awesome, fantastic." So
not a physical server, obviously, that would be insane, and my ISP would be very mad at me, but I rented an Arma 2 server, 12 slots, for our personal co-op play. I'll definitely pass along the IP to you guys later on. We're still tweaking out the settings and the mission files and whatnot, but it's been a lovely time, to say the least, to play a game with no lag, and...
Mention that no lag.
It's wonderful. I think last Saturday, me and Norm and I and some of our e-friends again, we were playing this sabotage mission where you spawn on a hill and this convoy drives by and you have to plant all these explosives and, you know, you're totally outgunned by them. You just have to time it exactly right, and it was wonderful to keep coming back to that.
Mr. Augustine, what have you been up to this week? Well, I know you've been, you know, tooling around in WoW.
Of course, always. Mm-hmm. Basically, just doing Alterac Valleys over and over and over, leveling up my rogue, enjoying that, and playing lots of the League of Legends beta with Max. It's been really fun. Trying out all the different champions, seeing which one I like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough choice. It's a tough choice.
You've been playing a lot of League of Legends, Mr.
I'm playing
McGee.
A lot of League of Legends. I've been playing a lot of Demigod, too. Mm. I've also been playing a lot of the Write for the Magazine and Do Work game, which is
yeah, not enough.
Fun. Oh,
we'll be doing a little more of that.
Cutting deep.
Hey, you gotta be firm, because that's how people grow and learn, right?
It's true.
You gotta toughen up, man.
Yep.
What about at home? What have you been playing at home?
Demigod. Almost every night.
Demi, yeah.
My friend Tyus from back home. Hi, Tyus, if you're listening. But yeah, Regulus and Queen of Thorns. Mm-hmm. Making it happen. I've also, after finishing Eisenhorn, I read through Storm of Iron by Graham McNeil, another Warhammer 40K novel, and it was awesome. All about the Chaos Marines. And while not as good as Eisenhorn, I would still recommend it.
Well, I'm not going to tell any of you about two games I've been playing, because one of them is just one of those things where you know you're playing a quality game and it's good. You just don't get into it. Totally unfair. It's totally, there's
happens
no,
to the best nothing, of us.
Yeah, there's no rationale. I can't say it's because of this or because of that. I just don't like it. And so I, turned it off. I installed it. I said, I'm just not going to put up with this anymore. But I don't want to trash it either, because I know it was, it's just me. I'm willing to say that. And the other one is just so unbelievably good that it makes me want to pull my eyes out and not look at anything else and just keep my eyes just for that thing. And it's a preview I'm working on right now, and I really can't tell you about it except that you shoot zombies. And it's fantastic. It's somebody did a really, really good job and is going to blow a lot of people out of the water, PC gamers out of the water very soon. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'm going to read the quote from the email you sent me. I would have given it a 102%. This is a preview, but it's not even the full game. Damn.
I just, it's a nice photo finish, because I think a lot of people were not expecting something to be this good. And mm-hmm. It's beyond that good. I can tell you that much. And the rest of the time, sadly, I have been playing a game called Cold Fear again, because I'm still working on this, testing these nausea remedies to see which one works best for gamers. And Cold Fear was a third person shooter in the classic, survival horror vein, that has you on a listing ship. And yeah, boy, does that make sick. Yeah. So I play that for like a half an hour, and the minute I feel it, I take another one of these remedies, and this is probably definitely one of the most unpleasant assignments I've ever had. Don't everybody chime in with support all at once.
You know what would be awesome is if you had one of those like rumble chairs, and then it would like sync up with the game and rock with the ship.
Yeah, okay, I'll bring in a bag that has some stuff in it for you that I think you'll really enjoy.
No, I'm really excited to see your results on that, because I have trouble with FPSs from time to time with getting seasick. So,
Well, I guess one thing is I was hoping at the beginning was some would work and some weren't. It wouldn't, and that was my assumption. And it's like, to me, if it doesn't help more than 80%, it's not helping at all. Because even a bit of nausea, is just such a gross feeling. But some of them are very surprising. So. And I can't, I'll say right off the bat that ginger really does help, but there are very interesting, ones that you would think are really kooky that have turned out to be much better than I thought. So that's coming up very, very soon.
Very
Evan,
good.
You had something to.
Yeah. If you need another listing ship scenario.
Oh, God.
There is a Left 4 Dead custom map called Death Aboard. That I've heard is very good. I haven't played it myself. I tried to play it last night, but I didn't get around to it. And yeah, it's getting really good reviews on the Left 4 Dead L4D.com site. Check it out.
Yeah, because like you're on the the surface of the ship on Colfir, and you're trying to aim at the same time with the laser, a gun with a laser sight on it. So you're trying to follow the dot as the ship heaves, and there's all these things coming at you going,
yeah.
It's like being in a shopping mall, you know? And there, yeah, it's just, ugh. So, Mr. Bauman, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been playing the Secret of Monkey Island Special Edition.
Secret of Monkey Island!
Good man. Yeah. Good man.
That's all there is to say about that, because it's awesome.
How often are you switching back and forth?
Like, every new scene.
Awesome.
There's a whole, like, something you could be, you know, write up about the old style, you know? Because I really think, as much as the new style is technically brilliant and awesome, and I love it, the old style, there's something that it does to your imagination. It just, like, sets it off in a way that the new style doesn't do, and it sort of makes you get into the world personally, like, more. I don't know. It's an interesting... Like
imagination or nostalgia or...
It's got to be an imagination thing. I don't know. Okay. Maybe...
Because I can understand that, because with rougher graphics, you have to exert more, right?
Yeah, it's you, like, kind of make yourself...
Yeah.
Figure out what it would, you know, filling in the gaps, and you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
And the old style is almost more photorealistic. Like, the faces are more...
Well, certainly the close-ups.
They're less cartoony.
Yeah, when it jumps into the close-ups, there's a level of, like, photographic that I think they, you know, somehow took mm-hmm. photos of models or something and pixelated them up.
Indeed.
Yeah, I guess sometimes I'm still shocked when I, you know, like, I was going through the Abandonware site the other day, and I'm still shocked. You know, I sometimes fire up games and I'm like, wow, that's so much rougher than I remember. Because I remember beautifully, beautiful, beautiful games. And really, it's just three pixels.
I mean, I love playing
it. And one of them blinks, you know?
I love playing the updated graphics. Don't get me wrong. Like,
sure.
They're freaking beautiful. But it also, I wanted to bring up the pacing of the dialogue is a little bit off in the new version. Because the old version, it was just the words and you can turn up the scroll length of the text, like, super fast, so you're just reading it as if it was coming out of, you know, super quickly. And then the dialogue that's actually audible in the new version is a little bit slow. There's a lot of pausing in between the deliveries of the lines of the two characters, and so that's kind of throwing me off, because also in Tales of Monkey Island, the pacing is spot on. It's, like, super quick.
Mm.
So it's kind of interesting that way, too.
Hmm. Interesting indeed.
Puya. Yeah.
Well, that by the way is our people pal friend, which I received in the mail yesterday. And it's a hedgehog, if I'm not mistaken.
As a people yourself, Logan, do you think of it as a pal?
Yes.
As a people yourself.
One more comment from the hedgehog. This is Logan Decker, your podcast host, and I don't care if you vote in every election or not, but come on, at least pick up the phone and call us toll-free at 877-404-1337 at extension 724 and record your questions for the PC Gamer podcast there, or send them in MP3 format to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. That's pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. Keep it short, and don't think we haven't been noticing that lots of you have been doubling up on your questions lately. You can also subscribe to our awesome magazine by heading over to pcgamer.com and filling out our interactive form on the internet. We're also looking for gamers who crave instant fame by having their awesome screenshots and photos of their rigs and gaming setups printed in the magazine. Just send them to letters@pcgamer.com, and you just might see your handiwork in the PC Gamer letters section and read the entire world over. For the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is a rock legend, Logan Decker, saying thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to getting together with you all over again next week. And don't forget, we have a Q&A with the team from team behind Command & Conquer 4. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.
Our story, we're calling Command & Conquer 4 the epic conclusion of the Tiberium Saga. Yes, it's the conclusion. We're taking the story arc that we started back in 1995 with Kane, and are bringing that to a close. Let me run through this. Our goals with the story are, if we want it to be grittier, more serious, less camp, if you will, than we've had in the past. Now, it's not going to be completely camp-free, but let's focus on camp more on telling the story. We want to put the player at the heart of the action in a new cinematic style. If you look at our previous games, it's kind of ambiguous as to whether or not the player is in the scene or viewing it through a monitor. You know, is he really there or is he viewing it from somewhere else? What we're doing here is the camera is the player, and you're absolutely made aware of that because people are talking to you, action's happening around you, and you're swiveling to watch it. If you were, you know, if you saw our trailer, that is not an example of the camera in the game. Tighter writing, no more monologues. If you play CNC3, Killian's up there for, I think, 3:40. You know, giving you the you know, the spiel and nod, which was cool, but we kind of wanted to get more into moving through the scene versus someone just standing there telling you a story. We're designing it to appeal to long-term CNC fans. There's a lot of little things in there. If you guys saw the trailer, you know, the Tacitus, that kind of, you know, only long-term fans are really going to know what that was as he pulls it out. But the story itself is being written so that people who are new to the franchise can follow along. They don't have to have all the knowledge from the past. There's just hooks in there for people that are long-term fans. The story begins in 2062. Humanity's on the brink of extinction. Tiberium is going to render the Earth entirely uninhabitable by 2068. So Cain, long presumed dead after CNC3, after the events of the Tiberium Wars, approaches GDI with a proposition. That's what you're seeing in the trailer. He's designed a system that can control Tiberium on a global scale. He's going to work with GDI to construct a Tiberium control network. It will keep Tiberium from spreading and will actually allow GDI and the world to reclaim areas that have been Tiberium infested for years. So the GDI Nod Alliance is formed to the chagrin. Sam Bass, our lead designer, wrote that. Chagrin. I wouldn't actually use that in a sentence normally. To the chagrin of many on both sides. So our campaign begins 15 years later. The Tiberium control network is nearing completion. And there's agitation from extremists on both sides. There's old, you know, there's GDI guys, part of the old guard. They don't want to continue this relationship with Nod. And then you have the Nod extremists that don't want to continue the relationship as well. So the alliance is held, but there's a lot of tension. Tiberium is stripped of control. Its power is harnessed to rebuild our devastated planet. Humanity appears to be on the cusp of a new golden age. Yet amongst the shimmering cityscapes, a sense of his unease is growing. What drove Cain to turn his back on Tiberium, on his core beliefs, the core beliefs of Nod, brother Nod? Why would he, so long our enemy, choose to help us? And what does he want in return? That's how the game starts. From there, I'm going to go into the game future. And if you have any questions, there are things I'm purposely not talking about at this point. You know, how does it end?
It'll be a split campaign, or if there's one faction, and obviously you guys have a long tradition of multi-faction campaigns.
It'll be split. You can play GDI or not.
Okay.
So, and you make that choice, as always. Well, I'll run through the gameplay. So, we're calling one of our key features a new compulsion for our RTS games. Every unit you kill is going to give you experience. As you're killing stuff in the map, you'll see experience popping over it. Experience is going to allow you to level up. And as you level up, you're going to gain access to new toys that you can play with, new powers, units, and upgrades for your army, and upgrades for your crawler, which I'll get into in a little bit, which is our mobile base. You can level up playing skirmish, campaign, or multiplayer. The stuff that you earn playing skirmish, campaign, or multiplayer can be used in any of those modes. So if I play a single player, finish the campaign, say I'm at level 15, I can go and start multiplayer as level 15 using the same stuff that I've already earned. It's what we call an open system. Usually in games, we only allow you to play a career mode like this. This is really what it is in single player. Here, we wanted to give it to, you know, to everybody who's playing the product and try something completely different.
So in that respect, I mean, is it a scenario where if I buy the game and I don't play the campaign until, you know, a month after I've spent in multiplayer and I've unlocked stuff, am I going to approach missions differently because I have new things at my disposal?
You can approach the missions differently because you will have access to more powerful units, but we also scale the AI and the equipment the AI comes in with based on what you have earned. So, you know, I would look at, you know, like a Bethesda product does similar, right? As you level up, the game follows along with you. We're doing the same approach.
And does that prevent you guys from enforcing certain limitations and missions, like, you know, you're only going to have infantry this mission?
We'll have a few missions like that where it is sort of, hey, you know what, this is a special thing and you're going to take control of this group. But for the most part, our missions play differently than in the past. They're not linear, and you'll follow the intestine until you get to one edge of the map. They're not like that. You usually have a multiple set of goals that you need to complete, and it's up to you to figure out how to do that. You don't have to follow and go from A to B to C to D.
Gotcha.
So great. It makes it pretty cool for some of the things we're doing with the gameplay. For example, you have Tiberium control networks to capture, and you're doing that in single player, and it's also the major focus in multiplayer. Normally, when you play multiplayer in our previous games, you're always trying to crush people. Here, you're trying to capture objectives. So that's the difference. And we're teaching you that as you play the campaign. So, what does it mean, the things you're playing your game are persistent? I've kind of said number two, you can take those units and cars that you unlocked in single player or into skirmish games. If you get blocked in campaign mission, you can take a break, place in skirmish or multiplayer, unlock the units and strategic options you can bring back to the campaign to help you kick ass. So even though it's following along with you, you're going to unlock some more powerful units that can make it easier to finish the campaign. Although you can play straight through the campaign if you want, it just will be slightly easier coming back to it later. Mm-hmm. So it's a fine balance, and this is why we're doing so much tuning in beta and stuff like that.
Sure.
So the game has three classes. Classes are offense, defense, and support. I got offense in the American and defense in the British for some reason. But anyhow, offense is a class that's primarily concerned with units and upgrades for those units. Defense is primarily concerned with putting defensive structures into the map, laser turrets and things like that. It has units as well. It's just not as strong with its units. It's more about those defensive structures that it's placing. And then support is concerned with air units and with global powers, buffs, and healing of units. So it's a very, very different style of gameplay. One player could be offensive on the front line, a support guy could be behind them buffing his units and healing them so they can move forward as a group versus one guy just off doing his own thing. And it really changed the focus of the gameplay. So there's a lot more strategic, you know, options to you as you play the game. And one of the cool things about playing is that if you get into a match and you realize, you know, especially in the multiplayer, you get a match and there's five guys that you're playing with and they all came in as offense, one of the guys can respawn right then and there as one of the other classes. So you're not stuck with the class choice. Mobile bases is what we call the crawler. So it's MCV-A is what we call it, MCV Advanced. And it can build everything that you are used to having on a base. So instead of building a separate war factory, the war factory is part of the crawler. And it can build as it moves around the map. It has to deploy in order to place the units in the map. It can hold four units in its hold. And then it can pack up and continue moving. What's really cool about this is you can bring your line of supply right up to the front line versus keeping it across the map. Or if you have something you need to defend, you can put your line of supply right there next to what needs to be defended. And that thing can upgrade and gain weapons as well, which is pretty cool. You'll see it in the game here in a second. And then I talked about respawning. It adds a whole new level of approachability. If you play multiplayer games right now, it's always about crushing the other guy. And as soon as you crush him, he's knocked out. And, you know, if you're knocked out, you're going to sit there for maybe 15 minutes waiting for your friends to finish before you're back in the match. In our game, you respawn, you come right back in. You will have to start back on the edge of the map that you came from in multiplayer. Originally, but any units that are still left would still be in the map, unless you change classes, in which case we wipe your units. But any upgrades you purchase are still part of your crawler, because the multiplayer is about completing objectives, not about crushing other people. Crushing other people sets them back, but it doesn't knock them out. Very different style of play. We're making the game a social artist experience. Respawning is part of what we call less intimidating, more engaging. We have the new objective multiplayer, which I was talking about. We are putting online parties into the game. So you can form a group of up to five and have that group move from mission to mission throughout the evening versus what happens today. You finish a multiplayer match, and then the guy has to go set up a lobby and he has to invite everybody back in. This way you can follow along and keep together the whole evening. And we're adding a lot of new community features to the website, in terms of ladders and clan. management, player progression is in the product. So as I was saying, you level up and you learn things. And we're adding a few new multiplayer modes as well. So the result for us is a player progression, plus cool new toys, plus persistence, plus customization, if you can choose what to have your crawler enter a match with, plus some new social features equals something new and very satisfying. I like math. It adds up to me. So that's just kind of the overview. I think the the need is seeing the demo, but I can answer any questions you have.
Yeah, sure. I mean, does resource management, do you have a traditional sort of harvesting system? Mm-hmm. And that runs off also here at CPU.
So, yeah, there is not the traditional resource management, but there is actually, you have to be concerned with the amount of money that you're accumulating.
Okay.
As you play.
Public is capturing.
Yeah, public capturing the structures.
Gotcha.
Just to clarify, with the respawning, is that if your mobile base gets destroyed?
Yeah, only if your mobile base gets destroyed.
Okay. And then if you have, like, extra buildings or units left over, they'll still be there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. And you can choose to self-destruct and respawn at any time, because you'll be like, yeah, I don't want to be offense right now. I need a defense player. I'm going to go ahead and self-destruct. But if you change classes, for example, if you change from defense to offense, you can't keep the defensive structures you place in the map, because that would be just an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
You know, okay. As your guy coming in, okay, I'll place a few defensive structures and then respawn. Okay, I'm going to get a few offense units, and I'm going to respawn and be support. It would be really, really difficult to tune.
Take one of the best of all of them.
Yeah, and even still, it probably wouldn't be practical for the player, because after you respawn, you start one at a time, and you can't respawn again for that minute. Otherwise, you'd have guys just constantly bashing and respawning too, just for fun, probably. But.
Can you give orders, like, after your mobile base has been destroyed, and if you have extra troops, can you still maneuver those troops?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. Okay. Absolutely. Just as similar to playing CNC today, you can hop from your MCV to your units. If you put them in a control group, you can just snap back and forth, just like that. Mm-hmm. You can, and just like hitting the H key or the home key, depending on if you remapped it, you can hit the Y key in your game, that goes to the wrong. So we kind of moved all the important keys up to the home row, make it really easier for the guys that actually use those shortcuts. Like me.
In terms of the classes, trying to get a sense of how specialized they are, I mean, how many units are shared between them? Probably like infantry.
There's only a very limited set, and they're all lower level units that are shared. Engineer type units are shared. Main tanks are not shared. They're unique. So they're very, very limited selection of units that are shared. It's always each class has a very distinct flavor to it. And you can certainly tell who's attacking. You know exactly what type of class it is when it's happening.
Okay.
So, we've been playing multiplayer on this since the beginning of the year. So.
Good.
Yeah.
Wow. So I noticed the score is a lot more cinematic. Are you guys using effective backing?
We are definitely going more cinematic with the score. You can think of something like Aliens as being a good inspiration for the GDI score, for example. But yeah.
I mean, at least with the walking units, would you say it's fair to say that they're more independent, independently firing turrets? Is that kind of a theme for the bigger units?
For the epic scale units, yes. Yeah. They usually don't just have the one weapon system. They usually have the ability to stand on their own against a wide array of units. So they usually have an air defense system, they usually have anti-infantry, and they usually have a main battle gun of some type. There are flavors of them. That one is mainly a bunker buster mastodon. But there are some that are better anti-aircraft, for example. Mm-hmm. So they have more of that type of a weapon system. So there's a mix. We never have, we don't like to have in our games, we never want to have one unit that is just basically on the you can take everything out. We've gotten close to that in the past. I realize that with the Mammoth Tanks, for example, but we're trying to avoid that now.
And in CNC 3, will we see sort of a mobility system that players will be able to deploy, airstrikes, things like that?
Yeah, that's the support player is the class that has that ability. So you can call an eye out of cannons, so you can buff units and things like that. So, yeah, we're trying to shake it up and do something very different with this class interactions, not just say, hey, I want my support gun, I just happen to have different units. Somebody who actually plays a lot different. Mm-hmm. He's got a toe-to-toe gun.
And how do you guys handle getting players to really cooperate and sort of synergize those differences between classes? Do you have, you know, buffs that you place?
So killing a unit gives you experience. Buffing a unit gives you experience. Okay. Having a defensive structure shoot and destroy something gives you experience. Mm-hmm. Capturing a goal gives you experience. Pretty much anything that advances the cause for your side when you're playing the game gives you experience.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's how you handle that. And they all have the ability to kill
someone. I guess, other than Joe, who's so recognizable within the franchise, you know, he does, and it's not something you can ask it, probably, but, you know, get plans and bring other people back that are recognizable.
We haven't really talked about the cast yet, so, yeah. You know, I really can't get into that one quite yet, but, you know, I can't say the cast, but, of course, Joe is there, we all know that, so we're single trailer.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's awesome. Dude doesn't age. I've known him since like 93.
It's crazy.
I haven't worked in the same company the whole time. I've gone away and come back. But I mean, I came back to EA in 2000 or something. When he hasn't aged, and he's been CMC3 7 years later. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You know, because I was like 20 when I met him, and now I'm 40. I definitely look 40. He does. So there's something going on there.
Seems like he's a fun guy to work with.
Mm-hmm. And he's awesome. Back in the day, he was basically a producer and a choreographer. And he was always awesome, just a really good attitude, very into what he was doing. So, and he's an awesome guy. He's a great actor. He's a trained stage actor, so awesome guy.
Fantastic. Well, we're certainly happy to see him back.
Yeah, that was awkward. Sorry.
just transitioning right over. Here
hold
we go.
On, I know. Hold on.
There we go.
Yeah, your thing's making a lot of noise there.
It's the squirrels. Okay, go ahead. Sorry. So, EA came by and showed off Command & Conquer 4 at the PC Gamer podcast.
You got this.
Also the magazine.
Playlist.
Sorry.
You're on such a roll, I didn't want to stop.
Yeah.
No, that was beautiful.
I...